We have had economic reports and I refer to Professor Hubner's report, a recognised international economist who look at these things. But Stephen, forecasting economic outcomes is often working on guesstimates. They work on the figures that you have available for you at the time and you project forward. Economics changes, the climate changes in terms of what you're working within. So I think in fairness to an all-Ireland economy, looking at a figure between £2 and £3 billion as the shortfall in this so-called subvention we get from Britain is a realistic figure. Okay. And it's a figure that can be covered within an all-Ireland economy.
Let's look at the reality of the next couple of years. Mm. Is it still Sinn Féin's plan to cut corporation tax, in other words, the tax on company profits, to 12.5%?
Well, throughout the Fresh Start Agreement, it talks to if and when affordable. Or that's not the exact terminology, but certainly if it is affordable. And this is a very good example of how economic circumstances can change. When all the parties sat down in good faith and discussed the devolution of corporation tax and the cutting of corporation tax, of setting a date and a rate, we were in a different economic era. Brexit wasn't round the corner. We didn't have a president in America under the gaze of Donald Trump, who's now promising to cut corporation tax significantly in America, which is going to have a major impact on FDI. His stated goal is to return American companies to America for American jobs. So all those things have to be taken into account, and we will take all those things into account before we make a decision, a final decision on the date and rate for income tax.
So is the 12.5%
for corporation
tax. Is the 12.5% corporation tax rate policy on hold?
Well, the entire executive's on hold, as you know, and we'll probably come to that at some stage. This
was a policy announced
yes.
by the late Martin McGuinness and mm. Arlene Foster, mm. and it was announced as a great trailblazer for Northern mm. Ireland. You know, we're talking about looking at manifesto pledges here and pledges that political parties yes. are making. Is it still Sinn Féin's intention to cut corporation tax within the next few years?
As was stated in the Fresh Start Agreement, the affordability factor had to be taken into account.
Is it affordable at present?
Well, Stephen, as I say, and this goes back to our previous debate, economic circumstances change, politics changes on a global level.
But given the economic circumstances mm-hmm. we're currently uh-huh. in, is it affordable?
It's something we would have to closely examine. And not only affordable, Stephen, but it's affordable. It's affordable.
You've been examining it recently.
Is it affordable on the basis of President Trump's stated intention
Stephen.
This is the reality.
Your party had the finance ministry up until January.
Yeah.
And your tactic of answering this question is to talk about Trump. People here aren't voting for Trump.
They're deciding whether to
vote for your party or not. So I repeat, your party had the finance ministry up until a couple of months ago. Were we in a position then to cut corporation tax in January?
Well, as I said, was it affordable? And
was it affordable?
Stephen, circumstances have changed since January. And our people are voting for us based on this policy. Okay, so let's look at corporation tax. The policy in regards to corporation tax was to attract foreign direct investment. The clue's in the title, foreign direct investment. A lot of that foreign direct investment was going to come from the United States. We now have a president of the United States who's put America first, American jobs first, and has promised to cut corporation tax and other taxes in America significantly with the sole purpose of attracting American firms, one, to stay in America, and two, to return to America. So that's having a global impact, a global impact. So our economy is impacted by that. There will have to be discussions and decisions made in relation to corporation tax, whether it's affordable going into the future.
But the plan was implemented by April next year.
We also have this other factor that has come into play. It's called Brexit, which is going to change the economic circumstances upon which we are working on this
and
island.
All I'm looking for is a straight answer that we can all understand.
Well, I think...
Is the plan to implement corporation tax by April next year off?
No, I think your listeners
corporation tax at 12.5%. Is that plan off?
I think your listeners will understand the answers I've given to this. Okay. They will understand that international circumstances have changed. And
that means what?
It means that we have to look at all the implications of President Trump's stated economic policies. We have to look at the implications of Brexit on our economy and on the island. And then we will have to make decisions around corporation tax.
Okay, but the plan, you know, here we are in what? Are we in June yet? We're certainly at the end of May.
Not far off it.
Right. So the plan to implement a 12.5% corporation tax rate by April next year, less than a year away, is it still on or is it off?
Well, I understand in recent briefings to senior business people that Invest NI is also looking to maybe perhaps put that back to 2021.
Well, that's Invest NI, but you want to be part of the government here. Is it your plan to put it back to 2021?
No, our plan is, and I repeat my answer again, to study all the factors at play here.
So you have no plan?
No, Stephen, that's unfair, in fairness. I think even you who and
even me,
you know,
who
it takes a wise man to act the fool.
Even me who what?
No, you're a wise man to act the fool. You know what, as well as I do, that the election of Trump on his economic policies and that Brexit has to have an impact on corporation tax.
So let me put it a different way. Mm. There are businesses who are contemplating investing in Northern Ireland, okay? And the latest policy statement that certainly I heard, and if there were others, then I would apologise, but it was certainly given a lot of publicity from Martin McGuinness and Arlene Foster at the time, that a corporation tax cut to 12.5%, that the goal was to do it by April 2018. Mm-hmm. It's completely fair for me to say to Sinn Féin this morning, well, look, is that off? Is that delayed? Is April 2018 not going to happen?
And I've given you a complete answer.
Is it going to happen by April 2018, John? Just yes or no, for my simple mind.
I don't think anybody, any politician sitting here, or any economist sitting here, or any business person sitting here could answer that question, because there is so many different factors at play. There are so many unknowns in terms of our economic future that no one can answer that question. And you keep...
So why is Invest NI talking about 2021 then?
Well, you need to put that question to them.
Well, have you?
I only received that information of late from business contacts that Invest NI are suggesting that 2021 would be a better time for that.
Does that sound more realistic to you?
But, Stephen, you keep missing out the point that was in the Fry Start Agreement, affordability. Is it affordable?
Well, that's why I'm asking you. So it is. Is it affordable?
No, it is. But all those other... See, and you have to sit down then, Stephen, as an executive, as a collective, and go through all those other factors that have come into play since Martin McGuinness and Arlene Foster made that announcement.
Okay, we had the dreadful, painful experience last Monday when Al Baydy attacked Manchester Arena. There was a newspaper column last week, John, that asked the question to Sinn Féin, just when did it become unacceptable to ban Manchester, to bomb Manchester? What do you say to that? When did it become unacceptable to bomb Manchester in the context of the 1996 IRA bombing of Manchester?
Well, you see, Stephen, newspaper articles and journalists and political commentators all know there's an election on. And I think it's disgraceful that Manchester and the horror of Manchester is being used as a political battering ram against opponents both on this island and on Britain as well. And that the deaths of those men, women and children are being used to score cheap political points in an election contest that's going on.
Or else it's a completely legitimate question.
Well, when I think about Manchester, and I'll tell you what came into my mind when I heard about Manchester and the deliberate targeting of men, women and children. A week before Manchester was attacked was the anniversary of the Dublin-Monaghan bombings. And who bombed Dublin-Monaghan? The British government bombed Dublin-Monaghan.
It's Whataboutery now?
No, it's not a Whataboutery, Stephen, but you just threw a Whataboutery to me. So I'm putting you in the context of the deliberate targeting of civilians. So who can condemn Manchester? The British government can't, because they bombed Dublin.
Would you condemn Manchester?
The
Manchester bombing last week?
I would, yes. And I have on your show. I was on your show the morning after it, and I condemned it.
Would you condemn the 1996 Manchester bombing by the IRA?
Stephen, I'm not going to get into that.
So you wouldn't condemn one bomb? So you do make a difference, which makes the question even more legitimate. What is the difference?
There is a difference.
What is it?
There is a difference. There was a conflict going on in Ireland at the time, which many, many different players were involved in.
For those people supporting ISIS or their affiliates, they feel there's a conflict going on. So what is the difference, John?
But, Stephen, if Sinn Féin can't condemn Manchester last week, who can't condemn it?
The question is, what's the difference?
But I'm putting it to you. What is the difference in Baum and Dublin Mullen? But the British government and Theresa May...
And they would deny this, by the way.
Well, they may well deny it, but the evidence is there that they deliberately parked car bombs in the middle of Dublin and targeted civilians.
Of course they would deny that.
So Theresa May has launched attacks in recent weeks and months which have killed civilians, men, women and children. Has she the right to condemn Manchester? Donald Trump has launched attacks in recent weeks and months which have killed men, women, and children.
And if they were here, I would be asking them a similar question.
Have they the right to condemn Manchester?
But what I'm trying to establish today, John, is Sinn Féin's thinking and your thinking as a prominent member of Sinn Féin. Mm. So when the IRA in 1996 put a bomb in Manchester city centre at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning, now, clearly, there are going to be quite a few civilians in a city centre at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning. Mm. What's the difference?
Stephen, the political context of the conflict on the island of Ireland is the difference. That's what the difference is. The political context of the peace process over this last 20-odd years is the difference.
Al-Baidi wanted to achieve a caliphate. He had a political drive to do what he did.
It doesn't mean he was right. Because you have a political drive to do something doesn't make it right.
Really? It didn't justify the IRA's campaign?
The IRA and the IRA put forward an argument for their campaign. I'm not a spokesperson for the IRA. I wasn't a spokesperson for the IRA when they were active. I'm not a spokesperson for the IRA.
But you do have your own mind.
I do think it's
about what you stand for as an individual, seeking a vote in this country, being a prominent politician.
Yeah.
So do you condemn the IRA's bombing of 1996 in the same way that you've condemned Al-Baidi's bombing last week?
I'll tell you what, Stephen. Well, we'll hold a group discussion one day, OK? And you'll bring all the political parties in around this table. And we'll discuss the conflict of this, which we have now thankfully come out of. And you'll put similar questions about Dublin Monaghan, about the importing of arms from South Africa, which weren't imported to be directed against the military force.
Here you go again. You're talking about
others now. No, I'm putting it in context, Stephen, because the IRA bomb in Manchester didn't happen in isolation. And there's political parties...
Al-Baidi's bomb didn't happen in isolation
there
either.
Is political parties using the Manchester bombing as an attempt to attack Sinn Féin and the Labour Party in Britain in some way to try and divert political attention from other elements of the election campaign.
Is it not the case that there is an uncomfortable truth, John, for people like you, which is that you find it very difficult, incredibly difficult, to come up with any difference between the disgusting act of Al-Baidi blowing up children, men and women, and the IRA putting bombs into the middle of streets where there were men, women and children? Isn't that the uncomfortable reality for you?
But that's an uncomfortable reality for every politician and political leader in Western Europe. Every one of them. None of them can stand back and say, he is free from sin, throw the first stone.
Why do you condemn last week's bomb? What was it for you that means you can condemn it?
The deliberate targeting of men, women and children is disgusting. It is the definition of terrorism. And I have no sympathy with, allegiance to, or understanding of the so-called ISIS, the predecessors in Al-Qaeda, or anyone else who goes out and deliberately targets men, women and children.
Well, they're trying to achieve a political objective, aren't they?
Doesn't make it right. The UVF, when they deliberately targeted men, women and children, were trying to achieve a political target. Those who bombed Dublin Monaghan were trying to achieve a political thing. When the British soldiers in Ballymurphy over 3 days murdered 10 people were trying to achieve a political thing. I don't agree with it.
So are you really saying that violence to achieve political means should never happen?
No, the circumstances which create violence for political means should never happen. And when it does happen, it's the role of people like me, who are politicians and not combatants, to work a political way through those things.
There's a guy called Jim Dixon who was blown up in the Enniskillen bomb. He was on this programme a couple of weeks ago talking about how he's got in for, I think, his 46th operation now. After the Enniskillen bomb, he was buried under the rubble, John. His mouth caved in, his skull caved in. To this day, he bears the psychological and physical wounds from it. I guess he would want to know if you think that you would find yourself able to say to him as a victim here that his pain is no less than the pain of the people of Manchester last week.
Of course it's not. There's no...
But your condemnation is different.
So it is.
Of
but
both bombs.
You see, there is no difference in the pain and the grief felt by the families, whether it's in Manchester, whether it's in Enniskillen, whether it's in Dublin Monaghan.
And
whether
your
it's
condemnation
in,
is different.
Whether it's in Ballymurphy, whether it's in Derry after Bloody Sunday, whether it's in Springhill.
Cloddy.
So it is. Whether any of those, the grief, the pain, the anguish is none different.
So why is your condemnation different?
Stephen, I am not a spokesperson for the IRA. I wasn't a spokesperson when they were active. I'm not a spokesperson when they've left the field.
One of the biggest issues in politics here, let's move on, is will there be a deal to restore the Stormont executive? What are your red lines?
Why put it in that context? Why put it in that context?
Well, because we are familiar with what Sinn Féin has suggested will be your red lines, and presumably those red lines will be a significant part of whether there is a deal.
You've interviewed me several occasions over recent elections and over recent political
crises. And what a joy it's been.
It has. I've always enjoyed them. And I say to you, I'm not painting red lines. What we are seeking is quite reasonable. The implementation of all outstanding agreements upon which the executive was first formed and was meant to operate on. That's what we're seeking. I think that's very reasonable. I don't call them red lines. I call them the implementation of previous outstanding agreements.
Yeah, but again, for those people deciding whether to vote for you or not, John, they want to know what are maybes and what are definites before you will go in to a Stormont executive. Yeah. For example, you say your priority. Use this word priority in your manifesto. You say the full implementation of the Good Friday and subsequent agreements.
Yeah.
Okay. You say an Irish Language Act and marriage equality.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do not get an Irish Language Act, may you form an executive?
Well, it goes back to the previous commentary. We're now at a situation brought about by the RHA scandal and the collapse of the institutions, where we have said to the DUP and the British government, for stable government to proceed, we need the implementation of previous agreements. And this is about people's rights. We've seen 12,000 people marching through the centre of Belfast only a week or so ago, but led by thousands of children who are looking the simple right of their language being protected in law.
So
that
do
is
you
an
say
agreement.
To them this morning that you promise, on if they do not get an Irish Language Act, because they're passionate, I've met some of them, that you will not form an executive?
Well, Stephen, let me put it in this way. During the recent negotiations, proposals were put to Sinn Féin, which fell short of an Irish Language Act, and they weren't accepted.
So therefore, you can easily answer my question. Will you refuse to form an executive if there's no Irish Language Act?
We have said to both the DUP and the British government that we require an Irish Language Act to go back into government. And as I said to you, during the recent negotiations, proposals were put to Sinn Féin, which fell short of an Irish Language Act, and we were asked to go back into government.
Why can't a politician do what a child can do? Why can't a politician simply say yes or no? Well, if I stood in front of a five-year-old child now and said, would you like a packet of crisps? They would either say yes or no.
Well, Stephen,
you going to refuse to form an executive if you don't get an Irish Language Act?
There is a range of outstanding agreements which have to be implemented before Sinn Féin will go back
into government. So you might go into an executive without an Irish Language Act?
There is a range of outstanding agreements.
Listen to the wriggle room you're allowing yourself.
I'm not allowing the wriggle room. I've already given you an insight into the previous discussions. There were proposals put to Sinn Féin in the previous negotiations by both the British government and the DUP which fell short of an Irish Language Act, and we told them it wasn't good enough.
And therefore, does that mean it's a red line for you?
No, see, Stephen, it's the context. I'm not going to entertain your fascination with red lines so you can play... records back and forth. And so,
in other words, what you're not going to do is make a promise to people who are voting for you and stick to it.
I'm not playing
you're trying to avoid your promises now, aren't you?
No, Stephen, I'm trying to avoid your game. Because in my...
Is an Irish Language Act a game
no,
for people?
No, this part of this interview is
a game. Is an Irish Language Act a game?
No, it's not a game.
So are you going to guarantee it to people?
I'm not playing your game. We have shown the Irish language community our commitment to this.
Showing it today, are you?
I and others, Sinn Féin could be sitting in an executive this morning under proposals presented to us by the British and DUP, and we pushed them back across the table to them because they were not up to an Irish Language Act and other rights which citizens in this society should be enjoying.
Okay. And one of those rights that you mean when you talk about that is marriage equality,
yes.
Right? So That's the ability for two people of the same sex to get married in Northern Ireland.
That's correct.
Are you prepared to form an executive without those people having what you would describe as those basic human rights, those fundamental human rights?
It goes back to my point. And if we had have completed the Bill of Rights, which was promised under the Good Friday Agreement, then this issue wouldn't even be an issue because citizens' rights would be protected under that Bill of Rights and our LGBT brothers and sisters would be able to marry each other in this society. So it goes back to my previous point to you. Proposals put to us by the British government and the DUP were not up to scratch. They didn't include equal marriage. They didn't include a mechanism for equal marriage. They didn't include a commitment to respect the rights and entitlements of many citizens across our society, and they were pushed back across the table.
There's not going to be an executive, is there?
There is going to be an executive.
There's not going to be an executive formed anytime soon, is there?
Well, I don't know. We are going into negotiations on the 9th of June. Our intention is to reform an executive, but I repeat my mantra. It's going to be on the basis of equality, rights and integrity. And that's the basis upon which a stable... It's the only basis upon which a stable executive can be formed.
And you'll be able to stop these Tory cuts, which is written all over your manifesto, without devolution, will you?
Without devolution? I think devolution is the bulwark against Tory cuts. And those who suggest to us...
if you don't form an executive soon, this manifesto is nonsense.
No.
When you say you're going to end Tory cuts, you're not going to be there to do it.
Those who suggest to us that we do not want an executive back have to understand that we believe an executive is the best bulwark against Tory cuts, but it has to be on the basis of equality, rights and integrity.
Do you know what I noticed in the manifesto?
Mm-hmm.
The red line which you did tell the public, which you said loud and clear, that you will not form an executive while Arlene Foster is in the position of potentially being First or Deputy First Minister while an RHI inquiry is continuing. That's nowhere in your manifesto. It's disappeared. So my inquisitive mind means that I need to ask you today, is that still Sinn Féin's position?
Well, it is still our position. We believe that if Arlene Foster is nominated to that joint office of First and Deputy First Minister, it will destabilise politics while the RHI inquiry is going on. And just think the process...
That could be the end of next year.
Just think the process through. But
you're going to leave people susceptible to these Tory cuts until the end of next year?
No, the DUP will choose who they nominate to in that joint office. If they nominate Arlene Foster, we will not nominate into that joint office. But think about the consequences of Arlene Foster.
At least there's a straight answer that you wouldn't give us about the Irish Language Act. Isn't that interesting?
Well, I think I've given you a very straight answer.
Isn't that interesting?
And the fact that we're not in an executive is a very straight answer in relation to the Irish Language Act. But in terms of Arlene Foster, the public inquiry will go public in September. So from on a daily basis almost, we will have public hearings around the scandal which is RHI and the potential loss of hundreds of millions of pounds to the public purse. Arlene Foster, rightly or wrongly, will be front and centre of that inquiry. So people like yourself will quite rightly be debating and analysing the RHI inquiry on a daily basis. And Arlene Foster, under proposals that she's First Minister, will be holding one of the most senior posts in government. That would be very, very destabilising for stable politics as accusations and allegations are interrogated on a daily basis.
DUP would say, and Arlene Foster would say, how dare you try to dictate the leader of unionism?
And they'd be right, if we were proposing that, they'd be quite right to be very angry about that. We're not proposing that.
You're going to veto the unionist choice for First or Deputy First Minister.
We will work with Arlene Foster on a daily basis if she's DUP leader. But in the absence of the publication of the RHI inquiry report, we will not work with her as that joint office because
why would you work with her on a daily basis elsewhere then?
It's not up to us to appoint the leader of the DUP.
It's not up to you to appoint the unionist candidate for office of First and Deputy First Minister.
No, it's not up to us to appoint that candidate, but it is up to us to
appoint... You want to veto it?
It is up to us to appoint the joint minister in that office.
So what's your reaction going to be if the DUP say, well, look, that's fine, but if your party nominates Michelle O'Neill for that position, they're not going to accept that. Mm. They're not going to accept someone who goes down and commemorates IRA killers.
Mm. Well, that's a matter for the DUP. It's a matter for them. If the DUP choose to adopt that position, that's a matter for the DUP.
But that's what you're goading them into doing, isn't it?
We're not.
It's about compromise.
No. Will Arlene Foster, as joint First Minister during the RHI inquiry, be stable for politics in this society? We firmly believe it will not be. Just think of the period pre-Christmas.
But unionism disagrees.
Think of the period pre-Christmas in the Assembly when the Assembly was collapsing around us and Arlene refused at that stage to step aside for 4 weeks. Government couldn't operate in those circumstances, and government will not be able to operate on a stable, sound footing while a public inquiry goes on into the role of Arlene Foster into the biggest financial scandal this society has ever seen.
I'm thinking of a period not too long ago in Northern Ireland when it was the chief constable of this country's assessment that the IRA were still active.
Well,
I'm thinking of how stable that was for government, John, and the DUP didn't walk away then.
Well, I think you'll find the DUP played hokey cokey with
government. They didn't walk away. They didn't pull down government. They didn't refuse to work with you, did they?
We're not pulling down government either.
Or is the Army Council these days?
I wouldn't have a notion.
Really?
So I wouldn't know.
Well, maybe unionism has a different view. They take the view of the chief constable of this country and what he said, and they didn't walk away. They didn't pull it down.
There was a murder last night. And it wasn't carried out by the IRA, it was carried out by the Ulster Defence Association, who the DUP are playing footsie with under the table on a daily basis.
DUP would deny that.
They may well deny it, but I think it's well recorded that the DUP are playing footsie with the UDA under the table
the
on a regular basis.
DUP would emphatically deny
that. They may well deny it, but we have challenges in our society which we need to live up to.
Which means, John, that surely what you need to do is stop dictating to unionism who their leader and deputy first minister should be.
There are valid, sound reasons as to why Arlene Foster should not nominate as First Minister moving forward. But there's a lot of things to resolve, Stephen, even before we get to that stage. There are the implementation of the outstanding agreements even before we get to a stage where anyone can nominate for the Joint Minister's office.
How are you going to protect this country against Brexit?
Our mandate will assist us, and other parties' mandates will hopefully assist us in protecting us against Brexit. The Brexit negotiations will take place in Brussels, Dublin and London, and parties' mandates will dictate how and when they are heard. And we are looking for a very strong mandate to ensure our voice is heard.
But heard in what way? What are you going to achieve?
Well, we've achieved a lot thus far, Stephen. When you look at the European Councils, the European Parliament's negotiating positions, those have been influenced by a strong demand from our own party and others for Ireland to be given central consideration moving forward. When you look at the European Parliament's negotiating position, that was achieved by Martina Anderson and our group over there, ensuring that the Good Friday Agreement was front and centre of the European Parliament's negotiating position.
Your manifesto isn't exactly a ringing endorsement of the EU, is it?
No, we're not.
You say today's European Union has created widespread hardship.
Mm-hmm.
You refer to austerity, deregulation and privatisation coming from the EU.
That's correct. We want to see a new European Union. We want to see our European partners working together. We want to see a collective working together. But we want to see a different EU. But we've never made any secret of that.
But you've lost that vote. It's gone.
It's over.
Brexit's happening.
A Brexit is happening, Stephen. A Brexit is happening. There is a lot of negotiations over the next number of years in regards how Brexit will outline our rollout, particularly how it will roll out on the island of Ireland.
Do you see a hard border being in any way acceptable?
No, I don't see any border being acceptable. And when people
There's
talk about...
There have to be no, a way see, of no, well, counting
have
what's
to be.
Coming in and out.
There doesn't
it,
have to be.
In terms of goods and
trade
services.
We have put forward detailed proposals in relation to special designated status within the EU, which would remove any need for border on this island.
Just explain basically to me how goods could then come in and out of the EU without it being checked.
We want to remain within the EU, Stephen. You've lost the vote. We haven't lost the vote.
The referendums happened throughout the United Kingdom.
We won the vote. There's 57% of people here voted to remain.
It was a UK-wide poll, as you
Stephen,
know.
Stephen, trust me when I tell you this. There will be a Brexit happening across these islands. How that Brexit affects the island of Ireland has yet to be decided.
You can find a list of all the candidates standing here on the Northern Ireland Electoral Office website, eoni.org.uk. Next up will be the Ulster Unionists on Wednesday when Steve Aiken will be in the chair. Always nice to see you, John.
Always nice to see you too,
especially on a bank holiday Monday.
Yes, I can't think of a better way of spending one.
Thank you.